Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we have a lot of championship golf to talk about as we welcome Brendan Sweeney of French Lick and Brian Varsi of Essex Fells and Lost City. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad to be along this hour. Lots to talk about. We start with the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. Our man Brendan Sweeney, the French Lick, experiencing that whole extravaganza. A lot of new names headed to the PGA Tour. But first, let's welcome Brendan back to the show. Sweeney, thanks for making time.
KJ, you're the man. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm based out of the East Coast, so the crazy stuff that was going on with my friends in Florida, including yourself. It's just insane the way that Milton followed Helene and I don't know. It was something to watch. Tracking it on the Weather Channel and Jim Couture, who's a big golfer, been at tournaments with him. So, you know, he got a lot of FaceTime and that guy likes standing in water. I don't get that, but you know, that's what those weather guys do. But you, my man.
Hey, wait a second. You mentioned Jim Cantore. So, you know you're having a bad day when Jim Cantore's standing on your street corner. And I live in downtown Orlando, and in 2004, we had Hurricane Charlie came ripping through. And the second day, I look out, and there's a camera guy at the end of my street shooting Jim Cantore. I'm like, oh, here we go. So, yeah, he's a good dude. I met him a few times. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a pretty good guy. But he's a huge golfer. So you'd rather see him on the golf course than at a storm. I totally get that. But
no, on your street.
I got you on. You never want to see him on your street. You know, that's what I say. You'd rather see him on your golf course. But so you're there for the Korn Ferry Tour Championship at French Lick, which happens to be at a place like Indiana. And then Sweeney has to like get home to Orlando to prepare for this storm, which thank goodness Milton, it was devastating for some people. It wasn't nearly as bad as it could have been, so that was a positive thing. But you talk about living in Orlando, you know, that's how many times you get hurricanes in Orlando besides when Jim's standing on your street in 2004?
Oddly enough, I grew up in Medina, Illinois. I lived in Chicago till I was 30. I moved down here in 96. And I think in 98 we had one, and then in 2004 we had one, and now it seems like every year there's at least one or two like named storms that come ripping through. Unfortunately, Orlando got hit pretty hard this week, and there's a lot of power outages. There's a lot of trees down, whatnot. We were Spirit. I live in downtown, and literally four houses away from me for about 2 miles. It's still a blackout there. So it's a trip, man. It was between like 3 o'clock and 7 a.m. It sounded like a freight train was running right down the street. So, yeah, fortunate to be good, and thoughts and prayers and friends and neighbors everywhere that everybody did well. So, yeah, I'm over the hurricane. I'm sort of hangry. I got hurricane angry-itis going on right now.
I got you. Well, you come off the euphoria of an excellent Korn Ferry Tour championship.
Yeah.
And then you got to hurry home to batten down the hatches and, you know, to protect the family. I'm glad the family's unscathed and such. But my friends on the West Coast at St. Pete Beach, it was devastating for them. Helene was worse for them than Milton, which is interesting because Milton was a much more powerful storm as it was building up over the Gulf, and they live on an inlet off the Gulf. So I know what nonsense they went through, and they're still digging out and such from Helene, which didn't happen that long ago. And then on the West Coast, it kind of veered north. So my friends in Port St. Lucie, They got some rain, but they were okay. Boca was fine with Toski, and then Murphy's down in Jupiter, so they didn't get anything other than some bad weather. So that was good that way. So all in all, as devastating as those kind of storms are, you know, could have been so much worse.
Who knows? Dodging bullets, and hopefully, you know. Well, then you go back like 2 weeks ago, and the people up in North Carolina, the Asheville area.
That's crazy.
Around Greenville, that whole thing. It's just chimney rock. It's crazy. It's what we're living in, and it is what it is. So just be happy, and if you move to Kansas, you get to dodge tornadoes. So.
Yeah, true, because my friends in St. Pete are considering doing something with their house, and they're not sure if they're going to rebuild and go up. It didn't get destroyed, but they know they need to go up if they stay, and if not, they're looking, you know, elsewhere, which is a big deal for my friends that just love the quote from the lay of the house was, we went from paradise, because she talks about paradise, living in paradise all the time, and we went from paradise to hell in a day, so...
And good luck getting insurance. it's homeowners insurance is going to be a commodity, and the state of Florida has this thing called Citizens Insurance, which is it's a state-backed insurance company that if State Farm or Allstate or whoever homeowners insurance won't insure you, they can't take the risk anymore. It's crazy. So I don't know. Maybe Nashville. Maybe that's my next move. I have no idea.
You know, a lot of people, I would say Nashville. My friend, you talk about living in Chicago for a long time. My friend Joe lives up in Chicago, and he's been up there, and he's looking at outside of Nashville because that's where his father and his brother live. But he said, I can't find the right house, and prices in that area have gone through the roof. I mean, what used to be affordable is no longer. And it's just crazy how the prices of housing has gone up. So now that we're, even though this is not a real estate and a weather show, it's society, it's real life. So, you know, we obviously have a need to talk about it, especially since Brendan Sweeney was right there and took on some water and has cleaned up his yard and stuff. And that took hours and hours for him. So I know he's still tired. From that, but you know, there's no.
I was born tired, dude. I'm just excited to be here.
See, you never sound like it. So I need to, you know, I'm tired too. I have to tell you, but you know, having that going through you, what you guys did and such, but it's great to have you on the show, and I'm glad. So let's turn to French Lick and talk about the Pete Dye course and the Corn Ferry Tour Championship. You were ganked up about it. We couldn't make it logistically work for us to get there to see you, but it was quite a tournament.
Yeah, man, it was great. So the Corn Ferry Championship, presented by United Leasing and Finance, benefiting the young children of Building Blocks, which is a really cool organization that gives children in Southern Indiana the opportunity to get a hold of pre-kindergarten educational tools. It's a really unique charity, and we had a great charitable fundraiser. We raised $150,000 for these kids that touches 28 counties in Indiana. And the whole week was just a lead up to a great championship. We had five different pro-ams. Wednesday night, we had a rather unique wrestling expedition in downtown French Lick. Downtown French Lick is shops and bars and some really cool things, but they had a little person micro wrestling went on.
Oh no.
It was crazy. No, it was great. And that was Wednesday, and I took some pros over there, and it was a unique experience. And then Thursday, Friday night, we had Beer Naked Ladies played, had about 3,000 people in our expo center. They put on a great show, but the golf was really the focus of the group. And to have the top 75 players of the Korn Ferry Tour come and experience the area of Southern Indiana that we're located in and take a bite of the Pete Dye course was really special. I was a starter for the week on the first hole, so I met all the guys that came through. And they're very grateful, very nice young men. You know, I'm 57. And all these guys, I think the average age is about 33. So it was almost like hanging out with my kids. It was a blast. And once they teed off, they took a bite out of it, of the apple on Thursday, had it playing at 7,600 yards. We've hosted over 18 championships. This is our 19th one since we opened in 2009 at the Pete Dye course. And it's the furthest it's ever played. And the guys were sort of zonked by it. It's like, whoa, what's this? And the scores reflected throughout the week that, you know, once they got a grip of it, you know, these guys are fabulous golfers, man, and they know how to work stuff out. And at the end of the day, Thursday, the Zach Bichu shot, I think, 66. And then on Friday, he was 10 under. So after Friday, he was 10 under, and he lapped the field, basically. Everybody's like, holy smokes. And I think he had a 5-stroke lead on Friday night. Fast forward Saturday, the weather's perfect, 75, sunny, not a cloud in the sky. So it was the same with Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The weather was just absolutely perfect. It rained earlier in the week. We had a great pro-am, but leading up to it, we had 4 inches of water of rain. So all week long, and this is something that I scratched my head about. All week long, it was preferred lies, which is lift, clean, place. So if you're in a bad, you know, area, no matter what you do, you pick the ball up, you wash it, you place it down. So the golf course at the Pete Dye course, like if you're against the fringe, it's not good. So the winning score was 9-under by Braden Thornberry, who played lights out on Sunday. He shot 66 with 25 mile an hour winds, and Zach Bichu, who was leading, he was 9-under going into Sunday. Doc Redman was 8-under going into Sunday. Brian Campbell was 6-under going into Sunday, and Braden was 3-under. So he lapped up 6 shots to win the championship. But I'm just curious to see what the difference would be if they played it down. Pete Dye built the golf course to be a tough test of golf. The scoring average for the week from the players was 72.4. So it showed its teeth a little bit, and the slope ratings or the ratings that we have are, you know, at the Dye course from 7,600 yards is 73.3, and from 7,200 it's 76. So these guys are shooting lights out. 30 guys are going to the PGA Tour, and the golf course came alive on Sunday. Winds were blowing 20-25, but we had great partners. It looked fabulous on TV. The Golf Channel was there. We have a 5-year deal, so we have 4 more years left there. Everybody in town was excited, happy. But the players who were there that experienced it are names you guys will know forever. So there's 23 players who will be rookies next year on the PGA Tour. And every one of those guys I met personally, and every one of them said they loved the area, they loved the experience. Sunday was a knee cracker. You know, 8 different countries were represented in the championship, and the broadcast went out to 180 different countries. So it was fabulous. Our staff, led by Dave Harner, our director of golf, Rob Kuntz, our head professional at the Dye course, Russ Apple, who's our superintendent, who worked hand-in-hand with Pete Dye building the course, just really went above and beyond.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about French Lick more when we come back with Brendan Sweeney. And we're back spending more time with Brendan Sweeney. And so French Lick has all these great golf courses besides, I mean, Donald Ross. I mean, you can't, you know, other than Alistair McKenzie, that might be the only name that really, you know, is equal in all the Ross courses from that time that Mr. Ross built.
I'd give Tom Bendelow. He was a Johnny Appleseed of golf. Tom Bendelow actually had a really cool job. He worked for Wilson Sporting Goods out of Chicago, and his job was to go out and make golf courses so Wilson could sell clubs. So he's known as the Johnny Appleseed of golf. He actually, Wilson's based out of Chicago, and we're 5 hours south of Chicago. Medina Country Club, Medina number 3, where I grew up. That's a Bendelow course, Olympia Fields, another one. So he's got courses everywhere. So that's our Valley golf course. And then, the Ross is just a killer track. So that's it.
So sorry, when you play the Pete Dye course, what's the length of the course for you?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Keith, the rule of golf was Sweeney golf, what I play.
Yeah.
If you dress in the 70s, you talk in the 80s, and you shoot whatever. So
Nice.
I'm a corporate golf player. So 70s. I do the white tees, baby. I play it right around 6,300. You know,
okay.
I'm getting old, dude. I'm 57. So I could put out when I connect with a drive, I can put it out there about 260, but an average probably about 225. I hit a 7-iron, 150 plus 155. You know, I can't be banging it with these guys. We play with, Ryan Ballingy. God, he's young, he's huge, and he just smashes the ball. He's a great guy to play in a scramble with. I can't do it.
There you go. That's what you need. That's part of your foursome.
Father time just gets you, so it's all good.
That's good. So names that we'll see. So you mentioned in the first few rounds that Bichoux was doing pretty well. He shot four over in that final round, and the winner, Thornberry, shot 6 under. To win it by a stroke.
Lights out, dude.
I mean, just
Thornberry. You know, he won the U.S. Amateur. The guy is incredible, I didn't know who he was going into the week. And my rule of thumb is when I'm up there, I'm in bed by 10 o'clock, and I hit the gym in the morning. And so I saw a bunch of these dudes in the gym, and there's this guy. He just looks like a normal dude. He's not like ripped. He's sort of like like a regular guy.
Joe Average.
And he's like lifting it, and I'm lifting him. Like, hey, where are you from? He's like, Olive Branch, Mississippi. I'm like, Olive Branch, Mississippi. I was, where's that? He's like, oh, it's over there. I said, oh, where'd you go? He goes, Old Miss. I'm like, hotty totty. He's like, all day long. So we kicked off our banter early in the week. And when I was a starter, I'm like, hey, man, what's up? And then we started knuckling each other, and his wife was out there, and his young child was there. And so I was familiar with Braden when during the week. Then we'd see him at dinner. Hey, how you doing? And it was the same with a lot of the guys. It was really friendly. But for him to go out, and he was 7 groups back.
Wow.
He teed off at 8:49 on Sunday, and the leaders went off at 9:55. So he went and posted 66, and all of a sudden you start watching. I was on 18. I was calling the guys in, but I'm watching on my phone. And Doc Redman, who's an outstanding human, he's one of the coolest dudes I met all year with this thing. And we're following him. Fourth hole, 4 putts. It's like, what? So he dropped back, and then he eagles. Then he went off the charts, and then he got the 15 in like doubles. I'm like, oh no. So he went down, and then Zach Bichoux was holding on, grinding. 16 dunks one in the water, 18 second shot in the high fescue and had to chop it out. And I played in a pro-am with him. He's just the coolest, nicest, quiet, just pulses, just cooking at 80 all day long. The wind was howling, dude. We're on the second highest point in the state of Indiana, and it just came out. And I was telling these guys all week long. I said, I hope you have a great week. You know, wish you the best of luck. And just thinking to myself that you've had three Chamber of Commerce days of 75, sunny, zero wind, and we have a flagpole that goes up about 50 feet, and we have like a 30-foot flag on it. And when that thing woke up on Sunday morning, I'm like, here we go, baby.
So I told you I'd only keep for a bit of time. Do you want another? Do you want? I got to go to break. You want another 5 minutes?
Absolutely, baby.
Okay. With Brendan Sweeney. We'll be back after this break.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to spend a few more minutes with a guy who is jacked up about the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, one Brendan Sweeney, a French lick. Now he's back at home in Orlando. And hopefully most of the yard work is done. But you seem to have such a great bonding experience. And I say that because these are the guys that are really good at the game, and they just need that break. And this Korn Ferry Tour now is really one of the only ways you can get to the PGA Tour anymore.
Well, not necessarily. Top 10 from DP World Tour. Get in, right? And then you have the PGA University. But, 30 cards were given out. So when we hosted, last week, there were already 16 guys that were guaranteed cards. So there were 14 spots that were available to get in. And the drama really came down to Sunday. So, it is the road to the PGA Tour. Their tag was #, tour bound. It's cool. And these are the stars of tomorrow, man. If you look at some of the guys that made it through, you have 23 players who will be PGA Tour rookies in 2025. Mason Anderson, dude, this guy is cool as heck. I started talking to him, and south of French Lick is Patoka Lake, which is the second largest man-made lake in Indiana. It was a floodplain thing, and they made some dams, and they did whatever. And he's from Mesa, Arizona. He goes, man, I'm staying in these cottages at Patoka Lake, and I brought my fishing pole, and I went fishing every day, going out there. He said, I hooked a turtle, and I tried to help the turtle thing, and it was a mess. And then we have three ponds on the Pete Dye course. And I said, you got to come out here and go bass fishing out there. And it was cool. But a name that's going to jump out at you, Keith, that you're going to know for a long time is Frankie Sappin III. He's from Minnesota. This guy's built like a filling station. He's a big kid. He's really cool. His parents are super fantastic. And he shot lights out. I think he finished third on the thing. Taylor Dixon, Noah Goodwin, who got in 30th, William Mao, another guy, John Pock, Jeremy Paul Peterson. It was really a who's who of who's coming up, with eight different countries going in, Japan, Germany, Norway, South Africa, Sweden, Chile, Australia. It really is a melting pot of golf. And who's going in? I mean, we've had the senior LPGA championships. We've had the USGA men's state team championships. We've had the PGA champion or senior PGA championship. We've had, Epson Tour. It just goes on. But the amount of exposure that we get from these events in French Lick has just been mind-blowing. And to have another 4 years of this experience with this, with the quality of golfers that you get and that you'll see, is just going to keep on growing the game of golf, but it's also going to be growing the area of Southern Indiana, which who I work for and who I promote. So,
yeah, he does a pretty good job. If we're talking to Brendan Sweeney about French Lick and Southern Indiana and all that area that he promotes, and it's great to have you on the show. And I'm glad you had such a great time. Because because this is the first year, and I know when I had you on before, it was before the tournament, and you were gearing up, and you had your blinders on, and you were focused, and that type of thing. But it sounds like it maybe even turned out to be better than you envisioned.
We had our post meeting call. I got back to Orlando on Tuesday, and we always do X's and O's. What are the best practices? What do you all want to do? What do you all want to see? And I think the cool thing is, Keith, is that with the experience that we've had as a group under the leadership of Dave Harner and Joe Bezozo, our GM, and Chuck Franz, our president, is hey man, here's your lane, stay in your lane. If you need a tag team, just reach out and we'll be there to help you. And I think in the golf world, especially when it comes down to production, and we're in the big leagues now. So the PGA Tour has an event production company that puts on the championship, and we're there as backup. And being backup is pretty darn cool because I don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is good.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about, is that bus going to be late? Is the catering guy going to show up? I mean, that's someone else's thing. So
nice.
The only thing I had to do that week was pronounce guys' names and get them off the course and pronounce guys' names and bring them on in. And then we had a really cool corporate challenge. And, I hacked apart a couple of names, but you know what? They'll get over it. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. Well, that's why Bob Toski had to get his name changed to Toski because he had trouble with the first tee announcer. It's a big thing. I mean, Bob Ford, one of our favorite guys of all time, announces now first tee for the U.S. Open. So, talk about pressure. I said, so he knows where you're at with that. But B, great to catch up, man. Thanks so much for making time to come on. We're going to talk to you before the end of the year, I'm sure. And, continued success and keep doing what you do.
Hey man, I'm just I'm a happy guy. I got a great family. Got a great job. I got a great boss. I got a lot of great things in my life. But most importantly, let's keep a good good thoughts and prayers out there for the people who need it, who's been affected by the weather, not only like last week, but the week before that, and the week before that, the week before that, and the fires in California. I mean, we're in a cool industry. We're in the golf world. We're an amenity. We're a great thing to have. But it comes down to who you are and what you believe and help your neighbor. Cause that's what we're here for.
There you go. See, that's Brian Sweeney in a nutshell right there. Going to take a quick stop and Brian Varsi on the other side.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you, you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
And we're back and joined by Brian Varsi. We had him on a number of weeks ago. He's a Bob Toski protege. But this guy played in the Senior PGA National Club Professional Championship in Sun River, Oregon. And Varsi is a heck of a player. I mean, I don't know why he wants to teach golf or whatever, but anyway, we welcome Brian Varsi back to the show. BB, thanks for making time.
Oh, great to be with you.
Well, thank you very much. You entered the tournament with high expectations. Did you meet your expectations? Did you exceed your expectations? Or was it a little short of what you expected?
I don't know that I had huge expectations per se, but you just want to go and play well and do your best. And four rounds, I was even par, so that's a pretty good tournament just about anywhere, I think. Started out pretty slow. I was 5 over par my first 9 holes. And so the last 63 holes, I was 5 under. So that was a pretty good finish.
So you ended up being first alternate, and that's for the senior PGA championship. First of all, I didn't realize he was a senior when I met him with Toski because he looked so young. And he says, I'm an old guy. All these old guys I end up having on the show for some reason that think they're old What are you, like 47?
No, I'm 55.
See, there you go, 55. And Sweeney was claimed he was 57. You guys, must be because you guys play good golf, right? Golf keeps you young, keeps the blood pumping, keeps your face tight, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, you got to keep moving, keep active, exercise, play golf, you know, stay on your feet. Trying to keep up with Toski all those years keeps you young.
That's true. Toski, a young 98, and he's doing okay from the big mm-hmm. storm. So that was good. It kind of went a little north for him. So I know that they were concerned about that for a while. So that is a good thing. So from now till the opportunity to be first alternate, and a lot of times first alternates do get into tournaments. I mean, I just think back to the PGA Championship with a guy named John Daly, who nobody knew who John Daly was except for John himself at that time. And the rest was history, is history.
Yeah, I think he was eighth or ninth alternate or something like that.
Yeah, they went very deep on that. But that happens too, right? Guys can't make it. They get sick. Different things happen.
Right, and this is the way that it works here, being that I'm in the PGA of America, there's 35 guys that qualified, and I even part tied for 35th, so we had a six man playoff, and me and another guy birdied the first hole, and then we went three more holes, and I made a little mistake on the third hole, made a bogey, so the other guy got in as clean, and you know, and then I became first alternate, and so there's 35 guys that if any of them between now and May anything happens that they can't make it, then I am the first guy, and then after that, there's about two or three weeks in the month of May there where it's open to anybody in the tournament that can't get out. Then they start going between our alternate list and the Schwab Cup points list that they have for their alternates. So as far as the Champions Tour goes. So from what I understand, it typically goes a few guys down into the alternates. Normally, now this is at Congressional, so there may be some guys that bump a toe and don't feel great and still want to go play just because it's such a nice venue.
That's kind of a home game for me, being that D.C. is my hometown. Congressional, the Blue Course, will host the 2025 Senior PGA Championship. Super excited about that. Means I may get a chance to play the course as well. So one never knows. But what will you do as a first alternate for those people who are less aware? Because they're used to the players that get into the tournament. But the guys that are kind of on the outside looking in, waiting for the opportunity, how do you prepare? What do you do, Brian, to get ready?
Well, all winter long, I'll be practicing and working on my game and playing in some tournaments as usual. And, you know, you don't necessarily do anything different, I don't think, because you always want to be ready. And even if I don't happen to get into that event, then there's a lot of other tournaments that we play in all summer long next summer that I'll be getting ready for as well. So, you know, you're always, I think, you know, as a golf pro and as a teacher, you're always working on your game, trying to keep things sharp. From my perspective, it helps me stay in touch with my students and understand what it's like to be a student when I'm working myself on my own game, watching whether I'm taking a lesson from somebody or just watching myself on video and trying to get feedback and continue to get better. So I kind of keep myself understanding what everyone else feels when they're taking lessons from me.
So we're not sure what the purse is going to be for the 2025, but for the 2024, it was $3.5 million. So you make the cut, and you're going to make a little bit of money. So that would be nice to certainly play on the weekend. But how do you keep your mindset sharp where you want to play your best, but then you're also teaching? How does that come together?
For me, it's pretty easy. I think I've become a better player. In fact, I told this to Bob a couple years ago, as I've become a better teacher, I've become a better player. So I sort of apply all of the knowledge that I've gained, spending time with a lot of different great teachers and educational opportunities to my own game. I apply that stuff to my own game so that I'm able to, you know, keep improving. To be honest with you, I think from our last time we spoke, I kind of told you about I wasn't that great of a player coming out of college. I played Division III college and averaged 80 every year. So I wasn't like some All-American that was trying to play on the tour and just couldn't make it. So I started to teach. But I was a guy that always enjoyed sports and competing and wanted to get better at golf. So I As I started to teach more and more and then spend a lot of time with different teachers, especially Toski, my game started to improve to the point where now I feel like I can compete pretty well on a national level in the PGA of America events.
So, Brian, when did that light bulb go on and say to yourself, hey, I'm actually better than I thought it could be?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a specific moment, but, you know, at times you have some success. And as you know, as a golfer, you're always going up and down, and you have kind of periods where things are going well and then periods where they aren't. In fact, I had a hip replacement a couple of years ago. When you say I'm not an old guy, so I've gone through that. And I played pretty decent the year that my hip was bothering me, maybe because I was a lot more patient on the golf course and, you know, sort of not trying to hit shots I shouldn't ever. And the year afterwards, when I was rehabbing and getting back to my normal self, I really didn't have a very good year at all. So last year in the wintertime, this past winter, I really worked hard on my game, and all summer long I've continued to work on some things. And I feel like my swing is maybe as good as it ever has been because of the time I've spent. You know, you get up early in some mornings before you have a full day teaching, and make sure you get some time on the range before everybody gets there. And some days you stay late when once everybody's gone and until it gets dark, and you know, when the hard work pays off.
Well, Brian, I think it's important that people understand their own game. And it's very difficult. I know I run into this all the time, where I can help people. I can analyze their swing. I'm not a teacher. Don't propose to be. I have great admiration for what you guys do. But you can see certain things in a swing. But I can't see it in my swing. So this self-analysis stuff is really, really important to learn, if it can be taught or if somebody can learn it. Can they, and how do they do it?
They can. I think probably the biggest reason people don't get better is, yeah, they don't really understand what they're doing and what they're even trying to do. Now, they may take a lesson here and there. They should take more lessons because of the feedback, but they don't really know exactly what they're doing. I've had many students that when you show them on video, their feedback is, oh my God, that doesn't feel at all like what it looks like. So, you know, I think the best players at some point, whether it was a long time ago or recently when they're working on things, they've done a lot of reviewing and reflecting, getting feedback from other teachers, getting feedback in mirrors and from video work, and a lot more repetitions than what people think. Like, you know, everyone thinks, golly, I wish I was as good as that guy. He must've just got lucky. And usually it's a lot of repetition. So, you know, looking in mirrors and getting feedback, stopping and reflecting during the golf swing, making practice swings, rather than just standing there and hitting a shot and then pulling another ball over, hitting a shot. When people do that, start machine gunning them, they're not really getting much value, because oftentimes they think they're trying something, but they're not even close to doing what they think they're doing. So their awareness of their body in space is just very lacking. And they can all get better at that if they give themselves time, but most people don't do the same thing long enough with feedback in order to really get a sense of what they actually are doing to improve on it.
Well, I guess that means I have to get a full-length mirror again. I hate when that happens. We're with Brian Varsi. He is an instructor. He is a top Bob Toski protege, and he is a competitive golfer, and I think that's paramount. We'll talk more about that when we come back after this break. And we're back with Brian Varsi. He is an instructor. He is a Bob Toski protege and a competitive golfer. And Bob and I have talked about this a lot over the years, because Bob is the leading money winner on the PGA Tour. It wasn't just about that part. It's the fact that he played competitive golf at the highest level, and he uses that in his teaching. And I think for those teachers who don't have that kind of playing experience, and Mike Malaska and I talked about that on this show recently, Mike, a very accomplished All-American in college, and then has gone on to a fantastic teaching career based out of the Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona area. He has brings up many valuable points about the importance of the competition as it relates to being able to teach it.
Definitely. Definitely that helps, you know, like I was saying earlier, when I work on my own game, it keeps me in tune with what it's like to be a student. So when I am giving lessons, I can understand their perspective, my students' perspectives. And when you're playing in tournaments, it really, you know, puts pressure on you to feel differently than you would normally just stand on the driving range, as well as, you know, you get the feedback if the stuff that you're working on is working, right? Are you performing with the things you're trying to do? So I think it's, you know, it's that an extra level of pressure that to see if you can perform and see if your body will allow you to do what you're trying to do and keeping your mind sharp. So I think it's very important, or it's great when teachers continue to work on their game and try to compete. There's a lot of guys that never do as they're teaching, but I think it's an important thing to do, and part of what I enjoy doing as a golf pro.
All right, so let's go back to a little bit of the self-analysis that we talked about in the last segment, and that is somebody who wants to analyze their swing and make adjustments, make improvements, and such. Is it more based on reps, or is it based on things to look for, et cetera?
Well, you know, you want to make effective use of the reps that you're making. So like I said, if you're hitting 1,000 balls a day, but you're just simply hitting balls and you have no feedback whatsoever, you probably aren't going to have a lot of improvement. But if you're reviewing and reflecting, doing drills or doing slow motion swings with really, really good intent and being really mindful of what you're trying to do, a lot of exaggerated things. So, you know, whatever it is you're working on in your swing, exaggerating it, trying to go past the point of where you're trying to get to from where you were, and then you sort of end up in the middle usually. It's the very, very rare occasion that I have a student that I want them to exaggerate something that they actually do exaggerated it, you know, until a long ways down the road. So the things I'm working on are things that I started working on back in January, February, when I started to really put myself on video this year and took a couple of lessons from a couple of different guys, as well as a little bit of time with Bob. And, you know, it's sort of paying off. I saw over the course of the summer spells of better golf. And then this past week out in Oregon in the Senior National Club Pro, sort of accumulated to where I hit the ball really, really well 4 days in a row. And the game's so much easier when you hit the ball where you're aiming.
Well said. One of the greatest things ever said on this show. And that brings us to alignment and some other stuff, but we'll save that for a different show. But you said that you went to a couple of other teachers. Now, how much of an ego do you have to swallow to do that? Or are these guys that know you and about your swing and such? Why did you pick out who you picked out?
A couple different reasons. I went and saw Jason Bale at Jupiter Hills, and one reason, you know, a couple of reasons, he's not that far from where I am down in Florida. But he also used to work at Sea Island, and his main mentor was Jack Lumpkin. And before I met Bob, I was working at Sea Island, and I probably was Jack's assistant for 25 golf schools. And along the way there that year when I was working at CM, that's when I went down and met Bob. And so it was neat to have a common background with Jason. And part of it was to networking, to get to know him better, have him get to know me a little bit, and as well as see what he's doing when he's giving his lessons. I watched him teach the whole day, and then at the end of the day, I got a lesson myself from him. So it was good feedback to work on. And it was very similar to the things I was already thinking about, so that was good to see as well. And then later on, I actually spent a little bit of time with Bob on the course. The one day at Pine Tree, went out and played nine holes, and he gave me a little feedback of what he thought. And then on my way north, I stopped and spent a day with John Tattersall in Atlanta.
Indeed. Brian, it's always great to catch up with you. Brian Varsi, my guest on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Thanks so much for your time, but we're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Brian would want you to. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.